Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.7 in the Mat-Su Valley, radiofreepalmer.org. We also have a live streaming site. You can search for that in the iTunes store. Just search for KVRF. You can also find all of our podcast episodes over on dogworksradio.com, as well as on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, the whole nine yards. And we'll talk about how to contact us a little later on in the show. Joining us from, I assume, sunny California is Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great. It's been a little bit cloudy here lately, which is actually a nice change. But sun came back out today, and it's been nice. You know, not as warm as it's been, but still, you can't complain when it's in the 70s and it's late October.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. It's about 15 degrees or so here right now in Palmer, a little chillier up at our place. We're about 45 minutes or so away from here, but it's definitely becoming winter, at least winter-like conditions. We had a little bit of snowfall late last week. I guess it was Friday. We got several inches down here in the lower valley. And then up by us, we just got a little bit of a dusting, but people are excited and ready to go.
Yeah, and, you know, I've heard all sorts of different forecasts about whether it's going to be a severe winter in Alaska or a mild winter. And I think that pretty much everyone who's listening to this show and everyone who follows dog sled racing is hoping that there will be just a tremendous amount of snow.
You know, I don't care if there's a tremendous amount of snow as long as the snow sticks around. Typically, in the last couple of years, we get enough snow, but it seems to warm up so fast in between the snowstorms that it's melting quite quick. So therefore, we don't have a whole lot of a good base. And I think that's what's been the problem, especially down here in the lower valley. You know, we talked about all of the snowfall that has sort of just disappeared from the Anchorage area. They had a real tough time the last couple of years, even keeping the Fur Rondi going.
Yeah, and as we know, because we've talked about it a bunch of times, for both Fur Rondi and, well, I guess more for Iditarod, but I think for Fur Rondi they bring in some snow for some of the events where they close off the streets.
Right, right. But as we said, as you get further and further away from civilization, the snow seems to be much better. It has been, at least in the past year, the past few years, Iditarods, in particular that second third of the race. And I know we've talked a lot about it being sort of a race of thirds. And that first third is usually from here to about the Alaska Range, about Rainy Pass. And then the second third is, you know, over the Alaska Range to about the Yukon, up the Yukon, and then that last third is that coast run and all that compares to on into Nome. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's often difficult to for people who've never followed the race closely or people who've never been to these parts of Alaska to get an appreciation for how different the conditions can be in different parts of the trail, because it's, you know, you go 100 miles, and you could have completely different weather conditions, wind conditions, snowfall and frost conditions. So we're used to thinking of these. Those of us outside of Alaska are used to thinking of Alaska as being like one place that's pretty static, and it's a gigantic place with a lot of different places and a lot of different you know, environments weather-wise.
So, Alex, we have about a month or so left before the entries for Iditarod close without a very significant penalty, entry fee penalty. Has anybody withdrawn or enrolled, I guess would be a proper word, since we've talked about Iditarod last? I haven't seen anything, at least on my radar.
I haven't seen anything either. The last I heard was Lance Mackey deciding to withdraw.
Okay.
But I haven't heard anything since then.
All right. So today we're going away from Alaska. This is sort of new territory for us, at least a little bit. We haven't talked a lot about this type of mushing before here on the radio show, and I'm excited to get involved with it a little bit. We're talking about the Pedigree Stage Stop. It used to be called the Wyoming Stage Stop, and that is, in fact, their website still, wyomingstagestop.com. And this is a very unique race. According to their website, it is the largest sled dog race in the country. What do you know about the Pedigree Stage Stop, Alex?
Well, unlike, generally speaking, you have two types of sled dog races. You have the distance races, which are generally multiple day races, ranging anywhere from a couple hundred miles to over 1,000 miles. And then you have sprint races, which are much, much shorter and tend to be, you know, of the 20, 30 up to maybe about 50-mile length, although I'm not sure you could call 50 miles a sprint. This race is what's called a stage race, and basically it's set up similar to races like the Tour de France, where there is a set number of miles that teams travel each day, and then they stop and they restart the next day. So originally, when they first ran this race, it was 700 miles and there were 14 stages. Now I think it is closer to about 325 miles, and they do it, I believe, in 7 or 8 stages. So it's we're talking about you know, going less than 50 miles a day, generally speaking, and the teams usually for each stage will be running for between 3 and 5 or 6 hours, and then they get to stop at different towns, different places along the way, and then restart the next morning.
Right, and in years past, I don't know exactly when they changed the format, but it used to run through 4 states, and now it is only running through 2, through Wyoming and just 1 checkpoint or layover in Idaho. But it runs right along that southern border, I guess it would be northern border of Wyoming, southeastern border of Idaho, and it used to go into Montana. They used to stop at West Yellowstone. But to give people a geographical idea, if you know where Yellowstone Park is and the Grand Tetons National Park in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, this is where this race takes place. And very quickly, Alex, the checkpoints or layovers for this race is in Jackson, Lander, Alpine, Pinedale, Big Piney, Marbleton, Kemmerer, Diamondville, Uinta County, and Driggs, Idaho. So those are the checkpoints, I guess it is. But you know what's interesting about this, and this is why I love this race, is it's the ultimate combination between sprint racing and distance racing with a little bit of partying in between. Every night you pull into a different town, and all the festivities that go on at any other race, whether it be a banquet or you know, a potluck or whatever, and all different fans and everything is happening every night in a different city. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, and it's a very interesting hybrid of the distance type races and the sprint races, because you literally get to you get to run for a concentrated amount of time, and then you get to rest your dogs and yourself, and then it all starts all over again the next day.
Right, right. Just a little bit of history. I'm pulling it up here on WyomingStageStop.com. It started in 1996 by a man by the name of Frank Teasley, with the help of public nurse Jane Ottoman. They launched the Pedigree Stage Stop Race to showcase the beautiful state of Wyoming and to make sled dog racing more accessible to the public. In addition, the race worked to spread the word about the need for childhood immunizations, and each year the race makes a contribution to communities on the race route for childhood vaccines. I think that's a great way to have some public advocacy there. I think this sport needs that. And I think a key to their mission is it's involving the public. You know, we've talked about it so many times, including just a couple of weeks ago, how we can follow the race, whether it's over the internet or newspapers or whatever. And a race like this really allows the public to be front and center and involved within the race, other than just at the start or finish, like most races are.
Right. And in addition to the stuff you mentioned, they started, I believe, in 2015. They started having a smaller race within the race. So they had the larger full stage stop race, and then there was a race for teams that had 8 dogs. I think the larger race is either 12 or 16 dogs. And that the 8-dog race was only, I believe, 2 stops. So people who wanted to get a taste of this but maybe not run the full 300-plus miles could run, you know, a 2-day race where you would get a strong taste of what it was like to be in this area, but not necessarily commit to doing it for 8 days.
And, you know, Alex, we've talked about the select company of Iditarod to Everest. We've made that comparison on several occasions here on this show. Do you know, since 1996, so in 10 years, there's only been 349 mushers that have ran this race. I found that very interesting. And there's only been 5,496 dogs that has run in this race. So I find that very cool. So I think you're in select company if you have signed up and completed this race. And I'm going to talk about some of that select company here in just a second. What do you think about so few mushers over the last 10 years that have entered this race?
Yeah, this is definitely not a gigantic race in terms of the number of teams. So any year in Iditarod, you'll have usually between 60 and 100 teams. This race tends to be closer to 20 on years when it's crowded, maybe down to like 12 or 13 on less crowded years. And so it's a more select group. The other thing that we should mention about this race is because it is basically in the middle of the Rocky Mountains, there is a tremendous amount of elevation gain and loss on the trail. And I was reading an article about it that said that last year's race had a total up and down elevation of 36,000 feet.
Wow.
On a race that's about 325 miles. And that's enormous. I'm not sure exactly what it is in Iditarod, but I know it's a lot less than that.
Wow, that is amazing. And speaking of that select company, there are teams from occasion that travel from Alaska down to the stage stop. There have been teams from all over North America, and I'm sure international racers as well that enter the race. But I know over the last few years, Lance Mackey has ran this race, and I know Monica Zappa ran it. I believe if it wasn't last year, it was the year before. Is that right?
Yeah. And, you know, the very first race, which was the 700-mile version, Rick Swenson, who's an Iditarod champ, won. Jeff King won this race once. Hans Gott, who has not actually won the Iditarod but has come very, very close a few times, won this race 4 times in the late 90s and early 2000s. So there are some names that will be familiar to fans of Iditarod.
Right, right. And as we mentioned, it's sort of that very unique hybrid being between a distance race and a sprint race. And I know a lot of the big names in sprint racing have ran this race. Arlie Reynolds and the Streeper family, they usually do very well at this, type of race. And, of course, most of those big-name kennels that have an entirely different type of mushing than these long-distance folks, they are usually the dominant force with this because they are so used to these very short in comparison to Iditarod and other distance races where they load up the dogs in one spot and head to a hotel and get ready to go the next day.
Yeah, and I know that there are some people who think, well, this is less intense, or this is, you know, easier than doing a longer race where you just keep going. I would never say that anything in dog mushing is easy, just because I think that's really not true. It's just a different type of strategy. It's a different type of skill that's required to run a race like this and run it very well.
Right. From a musher's perspective, it is a difficult type of race. Number one, because you are in a different city every night, you're on a different trail every day. It's not like running the Fur Rondi where they run in three heats, but you're running that same heat every day, and that's very similar to all sprint racing, like the Open North American up in Fairbanks and the Tok Race of Champions up here in Alaska and many other sprint races throughout the world. You're typically running on the same trail every day, and with this one, it's an entirely different trail every day. And for your dogs, it can be a challenge to do this every day, where for, almost 10, 12 days or so, your dogs are running a race every day. So you're loading them up, you're driving them to the new location, you're having to drop them during the night after you get done. So these dogs are living in the box, so to speak, for a long time, which is very unusual in particular for distance mushers, but even for local sprint mushers, that's not something that they typically do.
Right, and we've talked a lot about the stress that dogs have when they're with a large group of people and they're waiting to start, and I've talked to a lot of mushers who say that their dogs are very easily excited when they're waiting around to start, but once they get out on the trail and are just running, they calm down and it's much easier to deal with them, and the dogs like it much better. So this is a race, and again, it's a lot smaller. There aren't nearly as many teams, but this is a race where you have to have that kind of activity and that kind of potential stress for the dogs every day for 8 days.
Right. So let's talk a little bit, and then I want to compare it a little bit to mushing that we typically talk about. Let's talk about the junior stage stop. I think that's pretty interesting. That's with the kiddos. They can run from ages 9 to 13, much shorter race. But what I like about this, Alex, is the kids that enroll in this have to also do some community service work. I think that's a great way to give back to the community and be a musher as well.
Right, and that really fits in with the whole, the whole reason for this race to exist, and that they do community outreach, and they typically will give grants to the communities that they stop at, for use in public health issues and things like that. So this is definitely a race that is trying to not only put on an exciting dog race and one that is very accessible for people to come and watch, but also very much to give back to and become part of the communities that they're passing through.
Now, let's turn it to Alaska a little bit, since that's sort of my mushing stomping grounds. A few years ago, they had something very similar to this. It was called the South Central Challenge. It was a four-day event. I competed in this race a couple of years ago. We started up at the Montana Creek racetrack up near Talkeetna. Then we went down and we raced in Big Lake at the Aurora track. Then we went down the next day and raced at Chugiak, and then we finished the day, or finished the race running on the Tozier track, where a lot of the races are held here in Anchorage. And I thought it was such a cool format. Of course, I was way out of my element because they were all sprint dogs compared to my my very slow distance dogs. But I had a blast. I had a blast because we were running on a different track every day, seeing new trails, traveling with the dogs, meeting all new people in towns. And it was my first time ever mushing through the streets of a major city. And I know that's very common on Iditarod and on the, and the Rondi, but that's a whole new animal when you're out of the trail, off the trails, and out of the woods, and mushing literally through the streets of a major metropolitan city. That changes up the entire way of thinking in how you mush dogs. I thought it was such a cool race.
Yeah, and, you know, in the stage stop, they do something a little bit similar to that and similar to the ceremonial start in Anchorage, where they have streets blocked off in Jackson, and they have a two-mile race through the streets in Jackson at the start that doesn't count in terms of their time. So it's a way to provide people with a chance to get up close and personal with the dogs and with the mushers in a relatively large city. I mean, it's Wyoming, so there's nothing the size of you know, New York or Chicago or Los Angeles, but a relatively big and well-known city.
All right, so now it's time to talk a little bit about the controversial aspect of this entire thing, and I hope you can bear with me here, Alex, because I probably know your side of it, but this has been brought up on several occasions, at least in the mushing community, about having this sort of race, a stage race, designed for sort of like the middle to the back of the packers with Iditarod. They want to finish, they want to get a belt buckle, so to speak, but they aren't able to compete with the big boys. And it's been tossed around that it should be more of a stage race where they, you know, maybe start in Fairbanks and they do all those stages along the river, very similar to how they did a couple of years ago where they started in Fairbanks, went to Nenana, Ruby, Galena, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, at a much slower pace. They're allowed to stop every night as they see fit, and just sort of set it up like it is now. What are your pros and cons to something like that for folks that want to do something like the Iditarod, but they don't want to do it necessarily to compete?
You know, I actually think that's a pretty great idea. It would thin the herd, so to speak, in terms of Iditarod and people who were looking for a way to experience that area of the state, and that scenery would be able to do that, and that would allow the Iditarod to maybe go a little bit faster. My heart is always with the people at the back of the pack,
right?
And I think that they are. I would hate to see them eliminated from Iditarod, but I think there might be a lot more people who would be willing to do something like that, especially if they were able to do it at a slower pace.
What do you think about the other fans? You know, everybody loves to cheer for, you know, the Tom Brady's of the world, the teams that are always winning, you know, the ones that are winning the Super Bowls or the World Series or whatever, and that's who they focus on. Of course, we've talked about it on many occasions, that's who the media is focusing on. And, you know, you don't hear a heck of a lot about the Houston Astros in Major League Baseball, nor do you hear about, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, so to speak. How do you think that would change things, at least in terms of the coverage of something like this, if it was, you know, not of a grand scale like Iditarod?
I think, to be honest, it would be a lot harder to get that kind of coverage for a race in Alaska, just because the places where the race would stop, the stage stops, if it were happening on the Iditarod Trail or you know, that area, are much more remote and very, very hard to get to. And it seems like that would be competing for coverage with Iditarod, and it might be harder to get the media to pay attention to it, just because Iditarod has a great established brand and people know what it is, whereas a new stage race people wouldn't necessarily be familiar with or be that interested in.
Well, it doesn't hurt to start something new, to shake the trees a little bit, so maybe this is something in the foreseeable future. Alex, we're just about out of time. We are recording here at the radio station. We got to make sure we hit those commercial breaks that they have here. Very quickly, WyomingStageStop.org is the website. They also have a pretty active Facebook page. It's going to take part, I believe, in late January. Is that right, Alex?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, in January. And they also, if you go to their website, there's a link for educational programs. And as Iditarod has a very well-established educational component, they have information for teachers and for teachers wanting to use the race as a way of presenting lessons. And I've always thought that's one of the most wonderful things about Iditarod, and I'm very happy to see that this race is doing that as well.
Excellent. Alex, how do folks find you on Twitter?
I am at Coldfoot Films, and also people can find me on Facebook, Alex M. Stein, S-T-E-I-N, and I love hearing from all of our listeners.
I do as well. If you guys have questions or comments about this race, this show, or this race format, please send us a question or comment over on social media, and maybe we will be able to talk about those next time. Alex, it's been a pleasure having you on, as always. We'll talk in a couple of weeks, okay?
Sounds great. Thanks, Robert.
Very good. So on behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein, this is Robert Forto. We will talk to you guys next time.